Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never, and happy Independence Day. Now, I know that there is the 4th of every month. There is the 4th of August, the 4th of September, and so forth, and we really don't celebrate the 4th of July. To be clear, we celebrate Independence Day. And technically, that's why we kind of read earlier on Monday the original draft, and we invite you, it's up there on the website, on the Red State Talk Radio podcast page. It's in the list of documents that we've provided you already. Go read the original draft so that we kind of understand really what was, you know, what was put on the floor in front of those representatives of the states at that point in time. Now, I always go over, and I usually have a little diatribe on the debt is fraud. To be clear, 100% of that debt is fraud. But today being Independence Day, and today being a special day, a very special day, because this has actually kind of been a very special year. And I say that because we've actually had some real growth, or I should say we've had some real positive impacts that we've been able to create in your community. Now, in Wyoming specifically, because we announced a while ago that there were counties that had passed resolutions who basically called for their county legislators, their county commissioners, to establish a constitutional compliance committee, as we have these things in every one of our petitions. This is the beginning. This is the adults getting together and having the difficult conversation of what constitution we're going to follow. We have to introduce the concept, this principle, that we're not following a legitimate constitution. What the federal government is peddling is illegitimate. We prove this. And every committee that establishes, or every committee that gets established, will actually go through this. And they'll have to prove where the federal government has gotten the authority out of that original constitution. Did the states give that to them or not? And so, bottom line, we actually have the chair who was the first, if not one of the first, counties. So we have a chair we're going to be talking to. Her name's Tammy, and we'll get to Tammy in a minute. But she was the first in actually establishing a resolution calling for the county to create these committees. She supported this. We got this in I don't know how many counties. And we'll get into that, not today, but we'll get into that when we have her back. We'll probably have her back in just a few days for next week or what have you. But what we're doing is we're actually augmenting these really important candidacy shows, and we're still broadcasting, we're still providing you the ratification debate. So in other words, if you go to the Red State Talk Radio podcast page, you're going to find this show. We won't post this show now, and it won't be probably up until this weekend, but we already have the ratification debates for today's show. And so it's kind of like we're broadcasting two-hour shows, two separate shows. What we want to do is when opportunities like this come forward, we'll still get the content posted because it's critical content. You need to understand what the heck's going on and what these documents say. But what we want to do is we want to introduce you to those who are stepping into the fray, those who are actually willing to slay dragons for you, because you, folks, we all know how bad it is, but I don't think people really have an appreciation for what it's going to take. These people that step into the fray really have to have the testicle fortitude, because in all honesty, in some cases, if you're in a real blue state, or if you're in the throes of such steeped corruption in your system, these people that are going to stand up to do the right thing, they're going to get attacked. And we need brave, strong people just like Tammy to do this. And so we're going to have shows just like this, and hopefully we'll be able to pepper many of our content shows with shows just like this as we, you know, introduce you to more and more candidates, and we want to go through these very difficult conversations. And what we're going to talk about today, we're going to be diving deep into the Kentucky resolutions and exactly what Thomas Jefferson stated in the Kentucky resolutions. And so Tammy Young is a candidate, and I believe, Tammy, you're running for House District 27 in the great state of Wyoming. Is that not correct?
That's correct.
Okay, great. I was going to say you might be muted in case I didn't hear from you, but thank you for joining. And as a matter of fact, what we're going to do and what I want to do is I'd like to actually go through this. And if I can go through this content five times with five different representatives so that they, you know, get it. And by the way, folks, I know this may be repetitive, but I'm not sure how many times you've read the scriptures, but you can't read them enough. And these documents that we're diving into, these are so critical because this is Thomas Jefferson and James Madison telling us exactly what needs to be done to get the federal government into compliance. And so the first document that was, you know, issued was a document written by Thomas Jefferson. And so they're called the Kentucky Resolutions. This was actually signed by the state legislature in November 1798, and actually it was November 10th, 1798. And if I remember correctly, I believe that this document was sent and or received by the assembly, the Kentucky Assembly, in October. So they sat on it for about a week or two and discussed it, and they all basically blessed it and sent it forward. Now, there was some, I'll say some reservations by some of the legislators in the state of Kentucky, but what's important is that this was written by Thomas Jefferson, and it was confidentially handled and sent to the state legislature of Kentucky. Now, Kentucky was a breakaway state from Kentucky, or I mean, from Virginia. If you look, it was the Western Territory of Virginia specifically. So when Kentucky joined the Union, it was literally the citizens of Virginia creating a new state and becoming the citizens of Kentucky. So there was this relationship and I just say a respect and admiration for this man, Thomas Jefferson. And so it was an easy do. And this is where Madison and Jefferson's just, you know, how can we do this with, you know, without really having to travel? Well, you know, we got two states that we're kind of a part of. And so Thomas Jefferson initiated this. He initiated the first response to what? To the Alien and Sedition Acts, which were signed in July of 1798 by John Adams. In other words, John Adams passed these four acts. Now, these acts were direct violations of the Constitution. So what we're going to be reading in these Alien and Sedition Acts, or I should say these resolutions regarding that, is Thomas Jefferson's response for the state legislature to get them resolved to basically say these things are all wrong. And he goes through all of these different resolutions at totaling, if I go through this, I believe it's total of nine. Is the eighth the last one? Eight looks like it is the last one. So, oh no, there's a ninth one. There's a small little paragraph. So what I want to do, and I'm glad you're willing to do this with me, Tammy, is I want to read these things or take turns reading if you're okay with that, and then dissect each resolution so that it becomes really, really clear what is being said in that one resolution before we go to the next one. Now, again, this is what it says on the header here. The following resolutions were adopted by the Kentucky legislature on November 10, 1798, as a protest against the Alien and Sedition Acts passed by Congress. They were authorized by Thomas Jefferson, but he did not make public the fact until many years later. And that was because he was the vice president. And these acts actually would have made him a criminal for even speaking out against the fact that they passed these acts. So it was kind of a real catch-22. And what was really, you know, I'll just say this, that even though it became knowledge, it wasn't public knowledge. There was a long way before people really became even familiar with that Thomas Jefferson had a hand in this. And so most people, when they read these things, unless they read that paragraph, they didn't even know that it was written by Thomas Jefferson or that he was even involved because, again, he was the vice president at the time of the authoring of this. Okay, so the first resolution resolved that the several states composing the United States of America are not united on the principle of unlimited submission to their general government. The general government is the federal government. Now, let me read on. But that by a compact under the style and title of a Constitution for the United States and of amendments thereto, they constituted a general government for special purposes, delegated to that government certain definite powers, reserving each state to itself the residuary mass of right to their own self-government. And that whatsoever the general government assumes undelegated powers, its acts are unauthoritative, void, and of no force. That to this compact, each state acceded as a state and is an integral part, its co-states forming as to itself the other party. That the government created by this compact was not made the exclusive or final judge of the extent of the powers delegated to itself, since that would have made its discretion and not the Constitution the measure of its powers. But that as in all other cases of compact among powers, having no common judge, each party has an equal right to judge for itself as well of infractions, as well of infractions as of the mode and measure of redress. In other words, what it takes to fix. Okay, so what he's basically saying is, and let me ask you, do you have any questions or, you know, and by all means, pick. Is there anything that jumps out at you that you've got that you don't understand? Or something you want to get clarified? Anything?
No, I think it would be just good to define what were the authoritative enumerated powers.
Okay,
and I know it lists later on, but
so the enumerated powers, and it was specified during the ratification debates that the powers that were enumerated were found in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. In other words, Congress shall have the power to lay taxes, and that was the preamble of the enumeration of powers, because that was actually just a foregoing, or I should say an introduction to why these powers were being delegated to the federal government as far as the Constitution goes. And so those were the only powers that they had. They didn't have the power to conduct elections. They didn't have the power to build roads and highways and waterways. They didn't have the power to educate. They don't have the power. So those things were very defined in the Constitution. If it's not enumerated, they can't meddle with it. And so bottom line is, he's basically laying out this gauntlet. He's laying out the fact that the federal government was created with very specific powers, that it did not have the ability to judge whether it should be able to do more or not. And as a matter of fact, that's why he said here that the parties to the compact were the exclusive and final judges, that they could not be the final judges for themselves, because then that would give them the discretion, like he says here, since that would have made its discretion and not the Constitution the measure of its powers. See, if there was a clause in the Constitution that says, well, you do whatever you think is necessary, then the federal government would then have the discretion, because that was delegated to them. there's no general powers within the Constitution. So they wanted to lay this out that only the states could determine if the federal government could do anything more than those things enumerated. This is so important because the federal government is literally doing anything and everything it feels it has the entitlement to do. It does not have those types of powers. And those powers have never been granted to them, but they're getting away with it. Go ahead.
I mean, yeah, it feels entitled to do anything and everything. So
right. And so the fact is that we have to hold them accountable. But in this particular case, in this resolution, he's basically laying out that we, the several states, did not agree to an unlimited government, that we are the parties to it. They can't determine. They have no jurisdiction over things not delegated. And so the next resolution, he goes into the next one saying, resolve that the Constitution of the United States, having delegated to Congress a power to punish treason, counterfeiting the securities and current coin of the United States, piracies and felonies committed on the high sea, and offenses against the laws of nations, and no other crimes whatsoever, and it being true as a general principle, and one that the amendments to the Constitution have also declared that, quote, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, not prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people, close quote. Therefore, the Act of Congress passed on the 14th day of July, 1798, and entitled an act in addition to the act entitled an act for the punishment of certain crimes against the United States, as also the act passed by them on the day of June 1798 entitled an act to punish frauds committed to the banks of the United States, and all other acts which assume to create, define, and or punish crimes other than those enumerated in the Constitution are altogether void and of no force, that the power to create, define, and punish such other crimes is reserved and of right appertains solely and exclusively to the respective states, each within its own territory. So what he basically did was he kind of did a quick cursory, you know, audit or a review of the Constitution of what crimes do they actually have delegated to them with jurisdiction to punish and determine the punishments and so forth. And he lays them out there. Treason, counterfeiting, piracies on the high seas, and, you know, offenses against the laws of nations. Those four crimes that they could not, they had no authority to create a crime and punish people for speech, for seditious speech, or for, you know, bringing in people from a different nation that they may not like. And as a matter of fact, he gets into that in a resolution down the road. But the point is that he starts listing these particular acts. And he basically says, look, you know, you're trying to create laws that the states never gave you jurisdiction over. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. So as we move down to the third resolution, actually, do you have any questions on this?
Yeah. So when you say that the government only has those powers to punish for treason, counterfeiting, piracy. So then how do they go about doing that? And how do they go, how are they currently violating those?
Okay, so technically the only two laws out of the four laws, again, the laws are counterfeiting and treason. Those two laws are laws that are committed by citizens within the United States. The other two laws are actually international laws, because if a person is accused of committing a crime on the high seas, nine times out of ten, that means that because the United States didn't have a Coast Guard. You might, at that point in time, they were creating one, which should have been a part of the Navy. Actually, that was a part of the Navy. And then they started changing the scope, which, you know, anyway, that's another story. Bottom line is that the crimes committed on the high seas was basically to stand up to England and or any other nation to, you know, harass our ships and our sailors, because what was happening was Britain would basically stop, you know, either they blow you out of the water or they seize your ship. So you have to surrender, they seize your ship. And what happens is they charge these people with piracy. And then they basically impress them. Impress means forced labor. They take a couple and they put them onto these other ships, and they're literally slaves on these ships to support the commerce, the flowing of commerce, you know, for Britain, because Britain controlled all of their own commerce. Or I should say, they were a mercantile system. They didn't have a free system. So basically everything that ran the British flag was a part of the British control. And so that particular law was created to give the federal government jurisdiction to protect those citizens who were being wrongfully charged, and or if they did actually commit a crime or a misdemeanor on the high seas, then it would be their responsibility to punish them, not a foreign nation. Does that make sense? And so the crimes or offenses against the laws of nations is, again, you have to be in another nation where you've actually violated. And believe it or not, there was this book of laws called the Laws of Nations. And in the Laws of Nations, they actually laid out, you know, what everybody was expected to do and how to do it and so forth. So if a U.S. citizen in a foreign nation gets arrested and they're being punished for, you know, some crimes that, you know, supposedly against that nation itself or against the laws of nations, then the United States government would have the ability to seize jurisdiction. That way they could be tried under the umbrella and the protection of the United States and not, you know, marched in front of a firing squad or walked down a plank to their death or keel hauled or what have you. So the whole point of these two laws was to protect U.S. citizens, because the reality was to the framers that everybody that was a citizen of these United States were enemies to all these other, or many of the nations, especially Britain, because Britain was controlling the world. It was the empire. And so they knew that, you know, if you had an American flag, they were going to seize your ship. They were going to do everything they could to basically, you know, impress you, steal your property, and all of that. So Britain was a bully out on the seas. And so they wanted to make sure that they protected the states. That's why they were given those laws and only those laws, because all other laws of crime were managed and handled by the states. And so for the federal government to be able to, you know, have jurisdiction over kidnapping, you know, somebody taking somebody and transporting across the, you know, from one state to another, for the federal government to be able to engage in kidnapping or any other crime, such as drugs, such as transportation or communications, anything like that, speeding, we have to amend the Constitution to enumerate those laws. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And because only these were the laws enumerated, Thomas Jefferson's laying it out saying, hey, how is it that these acts, and he just listed these two acts. The first act he listed was an act entitled, an act in addition to the act entitled, an act. And that was literally the title of the act. That's why it's quoted there. An act in addition to the act entitled, an act for the punishment of certain crimes against the United States. He's saying, hey, those certain crimes aren't listed in those four crimes. So where do you get the jurisdiction for this? And then he goes into the next one, and he says, an act to punish frauds committed on the Bank of the United States, close quote. And so those two acts, he says, you don't have any jurisdiction. That's not an enumerated crime that you have jurisdiction over. So as he lays this out, he's basically saying, you can't, you know, these things aren't reserved to the federal government or, you know, reserved from the states. You can't do this. And then he goes into the third resolution. And the third resolution, and this is where he gets into some of these other powers and so forth. And he says, resolved that it is true as a general principle and is also expressly declared by one of the amendments to the Constitution that, quote, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution or prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people, and that no power over the freedom of religion, freedom of speech, or freedom of the press being delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, all lawful powers respecting the same did of right remain and were reserved to the states or to the people, that thus was manifested their determination to retain to themselves the right of judging how far the licentiousness of speech and of the press may be abridged without lessening their useful freedom, and how far those abuses which can be separated from use should be tolerated rather than the use to be destroyed. And thus also they guarded against all abridgment by the United States, by the federal government, of the freedom of religious opinions and exercises, and retained to them the right of protecting the same as this state by a law passed on the general demand of its citizens had already protected them from all human restraint or interference. And that in addition to this general principle and express declaration, another and more special provision has been made by one of the amendments to the Constitution, which expressly declares that Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. See, part of these laws that they were creating was actually saying that they couldn't create, the law was that nobody could print in the paper or say anything disparaging about the federal government. They was considered seditious. And yeah. He's basically saying, hold on here. You are actually constrained. You cannot create a law respecting these things. And you just did with this act. So anyway. He goes on and says, thereby guarding in the same sentence and under the same words the freedom of religion and of speech and of the press, insomuch that whatever violated either throws down the sanctuary, which covers the other, a writ that libels falsehood and defamation equally with hearsay and false religion, are withheld from the cognizance of federal tribunals. That therefore the act of Congress passed on the 14th day of July, entitled an act in addition to the act entitled an act for the punishment of certain crimes against the United States, which does abridge the freedom of the press, is not law, but is altogether void and of no force. So he's, if you really look at what he's doing, he's going into the laws and saying this is a direct conflict with the Constitution. This is not a legitimate law. In other words, what he's doing is he's auditing the laws that are being passed by these acts or what are contained in these acts. He's auditing those against the Constitution, saying the Constitution does not give you the power to do these laws, create these laws, or to make those things laws. And so that's why he's literally going through these one at a time. And he's, you know, painstakingly pointing out that these acts are a direct violation of this in the Constitution or what have you. And so the next one, do you have any questions regarding this particular resolution regarding three?
Nope.
Okay. So we're going to dive into resolution four. Resolved that alien friends are under the jurisdiction and protection of the laws of the state wherein they are. That no power over them has been delegated to the United States,
nor prohibited to the states, to the individual states, distinct from the power over citizens, and it being true as a general principle, and one of the amendments of the Constitution having also declared that, quote, the powers not delegated to the states by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Quote, the Act of Congress of the United States passed on, actually that was close quote, right? Yeah, that was close quote. So the Act of Congress passed on the day or on the blank day of July 1798, entitled An Act Concerning Aliens, which assumes power over alien friends, not delegated to the Constitution, is not law. So he's basically pointing out that this one act, they don't even have the jurisdiction in the Constitution over aliens in America. Most people don't know this, that it wasn't until 1808 when the federal government was able and granted jurisdiction over the immigration process and over the control of people coming into the United States. The only thing that was delegated in those powers, initially delegated over the importation and or immigration, was that the federal government had the responsibility of creating a uniform law on the naturalization of citizens. In other words, what did it take for a person to become a citizen of the United States? And so I'm not sure if you knew that, but if I pull up the color-coded Constitution, I'll get to this, because this is in Article 1, Section 9, and it is right here. He says, this is Section 9. This is a reservation, a restriction, placed on the federal government. The migration or importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by Congress prior to the year 1808. That right there gave the states full reign of being able to import people. And the whole intent was the reason why the federal governments were hands-off for the first 20 years of their existence was to allow the southern states who claimed that they were decimated, their slave plantations were decimated because of the Revolutionary War, and due to the fact that, you know, they freed, many of them had to be freed because that was the stipulation for them fighting in the Revolutionary War. So we actually had, believe it or not, and contrary to what anybody else says, even though some of the states reneged, they didn't actually free their slaves. They promised them, and then they broke that promise. But there were many slaves that actually did get freedom, and they were freemen. And they became citizens of the United States because they were freemen at that point. And they were property holders, property owners, or what have you. And most people don't know, because we're not taught this stuff, that there were plenty of black freemen that actually voted for representation in the delegates of the ratification of the Constitution. Most people think it was all white, and that's not true, because those slaves were freed and they were granted full citizenship. And this was where, you know, we actually, you know, started debating slavery in the United States and so forth. But putting that aside, this right here in Resolution 4 is all about basically saying, look, you can't even make laws regarding the importation of people. Even if you don't like people from France coming into America, because that was actually what was happening. They were actually starting to label, you know, certain immigrants because they considered them as a bad influence in America and in politics. They started trying to pass laws to say these people cannot migrate here. But clearly the states had full reign of the migration and importation of people for the first 20 years. Okay? Does that make sense?
So how does this apply to us today?
So, what he's doing is he's just pointing out that in this particular time, since 1808 hadn't occurred yet, The federal right. government cannot create laws regarding the importation of people. It's
right.
only
so he's just saying at that time they didn't have the enumerated power to create laws.
Right. Well, so, actually, and he'll go into this even more, because if you see, the next resolution really covers this in detail. I'm kind of leaning forward, because let me read the next one. Resolved that in addition to the general principle as well as the express declaration that powers not delegated are reserved, another and more special provision inserted into the Constitution from abundant caution has declared, quote, what I just read to you, the migration or importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by Congress prior to the year of 1808, close quote. That's right out of the Constitution. And he says this, that this Commonwealth does admit the migration of aliens, friends described as the subject of the said act concerning aliens, that a provision against prohibiting their migration is a So he basically says that a provision against prohibiting their migration, in other words, you're creating this law that says they can't come in, and then he says, is a provision against all acts equivalent thereto, or it would be nugatory, that to remove them when migrated is equivalent to a prohibition to their migration, and is therefore contrary to the said provision of the Constitution and void, because they were trying to kick out some of the Frenchmen that were here. There was a big shift in America where because of the French Revolution, and because if you ever heard the term Anglophile and Francophile, we started dividing ourselves politically and in associations. And so anybody that preferred the French over the English were considered Francophiles. Anybody that preferred the English over the French were considered Anglophiles. And so they were literally calling each other, these names as disparaging comments. And the point was this, is that because of the French Revolution, people felt that the French went way too far. They beheaded everybody. It was very uncivilized revolution. It was a communist revolution, technically, but it failed. The communist revolution failed because Napoleon basically took over. So as we look at this particular resolution, Resolution 5, we can clearly see that the intent behind this, help me out here, the intent behind this, this resolution was to prove that the federal government could not meddle in any of the migrations of persons into these states. And they were literally creating a law that says, if you have Frenchmen, you're bringing in Frenchmen, we're going to deport them. And he basically says, that's contrary to this provision. You have to wait till 1808 to do that. And actually, technically, because those people were allowed in under that law, technically, if they created a law to remove them after the fact, guess what that would have been? That would have been an ex post facto law, which the Constitution prohibits the federal government and the state governments from creating ex post facto laws. So in other words, all people that made it in under the wire were entitled to stay here. They couldn't be kicked out unless there was cause. In other words, unless they were treasonous or they did something that actually violated the Constitution, not these phony made-up laws. Okay.
Right, so he was just saying that before 1808, they couldn't kick him out.
Right.
If he came into the country before that time, they couldn't kick him out.
That is correct. Now, just to be fair here, we've gotten through the first five petitions, and all things being equal, because sometimes I forget to do things. I'm not sure if you noticed, but we've already spent 36 minutes in this, and we only have so much time for this air for the show. So I just letting you know, we'll probably have to do maybe the sixth resolution and kind of wrap it up with that. And so if you're okay with that, let me just get into the sixth resolution. That the imprisonment of a person under the protection of the laws of this Commonwealth on his failure to obey the simple order of the president to depart out of the United States, as is undertaken by said act entitled An Act Concerning Aliens, close quote, is contrary to the Constitution. One amendment to which has provided that no person shall be deprived of liberty without due process of law. And so I have a problem with this one, because that technically the federal government cannot do that to citizens. But the due process of law, technically, when you look at the 14th Amendment, because this has changed, what he's saying here has changed dramatically because of the 14th Amendment, that the protections and privileges and immunities are only extended to U.S. citizens, not foreigners. So when we see the courts today saying anybody and everybody is entitled to due process, entitled to these protections of the Constitution, no, they're not. As a matter of fact, you know, if you are here and you have no reason to be here, other than the fact that you got away with trespassing and you're an invader in our country, there's no due process. You're to be gathered and sent back to your place of origin. In other words, as technically what we could do is we could just dump them off on the southern border and say, that's it. Get back to where you came from. We're not responsible to pay their airfare or anything like that. And as a matter of fact, if we did that, Mexico would then have to say, you know what, stop coming up here, because we now have a real problem, because America just displaced 50 million invaders onto us. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So that changed. So what he's saying in Resolution 6 is that before 1808, they couldn't kick him out, and they were also protected.
Right, they were protected even after 1808, because that would have been an ex post facto law, but correct, because the 14th Amendment hadn't passed the due process. So in other words, the federal government couldn't act on doing anything without having to give anybody due process, because I don't believe that it stated that due process had to be handled or was preserved only for U.S. citizens. I'd have to, when we go through the Constitution later, we can do that. But anyway, Thomas Jefferson goes on and says, and that another having provided that in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a public trial by an impartial jury, to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of the counsel for defense. In other words, what he's doing is he's going through the amendments that when the federal government acts, then these are protections that you have, you know, to fight, to defend yourself in court. And so when they do this, that these things were to be done to help defend any people that they were going to just kick out, that one, first off, they didn't even have the authority to do. So then the next part, or following on, he says, the same act undertaking the authority the president to remove a person out of the United States who is under the protection of the law on his own suspicion, without accusation, without jury, without public trial, without confrontation of the witnesses against him, without heeding witnesses in his favor, without defense, without counsel, is contrary to the provisions also of the Constitution. See, he's literally going through the nuts and bolts of the Constitution and saying, this is how you're violating the Constitution by creating these laws. In other words, this is a very well-executed audit. But utterly, and he says it, so therefore, contrary to the provisions also of the Constitution, is therefore not law, but utterly void and of no force, that the transferring the power of judging any person who is under the protection of the laws from the courts to the President of the United States is, or as is undertaken by the same act concerning aliens, is against the article of the Constitution, which provides that, quote, the judicial power of the United States shall be vested in the courts, the judges which shall hold their offices during good behavior, close quote. And that the said act is void for that reason also. It is further to be noted that this transfer of judiciary power is to that magistrate of the general government who already possesses all the executive and negative on all legislative powers. So in other words, he's basically saying that, you know, the president is trying to pull in, you know, and trying to make himself a king. Now, one of the things that I'm going to try not to go down this rat hole, but I think it's necessary to say this. Hamilton had been involved in the federal government, even though he left the presidency and was not a part of official actions in the executive branch. In other words, he was no longer the Secretary of the Treasury. Hamilton was helping, and he was, I'll just say he was the, what do you call that, the marionette, the guy that, you know, controls the strings on the puppet. And he was basically giving people the guidance on what to do in creating these unconstitutional laws. And this was truly an attempt by Hamilton and, I will say, the big government Federalist in trying to move America closer to a monarchy by giving the president more and more powers. And so Thomas Jefferson was not going to have it. He was laying it out that, you know, you can't do that. And, you know, that's not delegated to the president. And the courts only have this type of jurisdiction. So as he's going through in Resolution 6, and he's pointing out how these different acts violate these things, the spirit of the law, as well as the letter of the Constitution, he's auditing and delineating how these things are absolutely unconstitutional assumptions. These are unconstitutional acts. And so what he's doing is he's making these things as declarations. And he's come out, and how many times have we seen him say that these are void of no force?
So when he says that they're void and of no force, is he saying just to ignore it?
Well, so that was what most people would take away. And so I'm here to tell you, or I'm here to basically point out, and let me do the void here. We'll look at how many times he says void. 6 times. In other words, he basically says these are void and of no force, and void for that reason or what have you. So he's priming the pump to basically say, look, we're all in this as the Union, and we're going to get into this. But bottom line, he's not calling for nullification. He's identifying that these laws are direct violations or violations of the Constitution and the spirit of the law. And so as we get into the next half of this in our next show, when I can get you back again, and it'll be probably in a few days, and folks, I'll let you know when we have Tammy back on, because I want to talk more about your race, but I want to go through these things as well, because every legislator needs to understand these arguments of, you know, how to identify and what to do in dealing with unconstitutional government. We've got a huge mess. And as a matter of fact, every state legislature should be in permanent emergency session in dealing with all of the constitutional violations that have occurred.
Right.
And so, you know, anybody that says otherwise, oh, no, everything's okay, that's all right, you know, to pay no attention to the guy behind the curtain. Pay no attention to what we're doing. Those are the people that are actually actively involved in destroying our Constitution and everything we hold dear. Again, less than 2 minutes left. I really appreciate, one, the fact that you're you're jumping into the fray. Now you're running against a lawyer, and you're running against what's one term? She's been in office for one or two terms. How many?
One term. Yes.
Okay, so she's kind of fighting and clinging on to try to be one of those people to help aggrandize, you know, her position and a career in basically unconstitutional government. Because, folks, I want you to know that this representative that she's challenging voted against creating the Constitutional Compliance Committee. Every person, every public officer that is under the oath of the office that they're supposed to support that Constitution is obligated to create and support these committees to basically help everybody start understanding. This is how the mass people become educated. Because bottom line, the elixir in getting our government back is a far better drink than what they have in store for us when they actually tear up the Constitution and throw us into the arms of the globalists. Technically, most people will argue that we're already there. The facade is there, and they've created all of these things that are believable. But technically, until the states finally say we do not hold that Constitution as our governing document, because they're the parties to it. Until they do that, we have every opportunity to pull back and get away from the precipice and get away from falling. I want to thank you for your time and coming and joining us. And we'll have you back as soon as possible. We'll have you definitely back by next week. Is that good?
That sounds great.
Awesome.
Thank you.
God bless. And we'll talk more in the next meeting about your candidacy, how people can look you up and all of that type of stuff. Okay.
Okay,
all right.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
All right. With that, and I hope that everybody enjoyed that. And with that, we want to let you know that in the next few months up to the general election, we hope to have engaging conversations on very specific content. It is paramount, folks, that those who we elect understand what they have to do if we're going to save this government. It's not just getting a good conservative in. They need to know how to attack the existing system and how to drive constitutional compliance. If you want to preserve the Constitution, then we absolutely have to take positive action. We must interpose in every possible way. Just remember this, that as we look at this concept of interposition, it is we the people taking the necessary measures and actions in arresting the evil that is actually being imposed upon us by what people call our government, but is not the legitimate government. These are powers not delegated. This is all, as I've been saying for years, this is a house of cards. And it just requires the wind coming at the right direction, and it is all down with one little puff, because they've basically bolstered themselves and created buttresses in maintaining what we will call this reinforcement against the natural resistance of, you know, what we see as the conservatives trying to stand up. This is why you can never get justice in our current system. Our system has turned its back on justice and has turned its face in front towards profit. Folks, we're bringing you what you need to know. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.